It's the Raleigh James Show.
James Show. You know, we talk a lot about 9/11, and I always come from the position, being a layman when it comes to engineering for the most part, especially structural engineering, that I don't know what happened on 9/11, but what I can absolutely guarantee is the Patriot Act was not written on 9/12. And that is the overwhelming truth, that at the very least, the government was ready to capitalize on the untoward event. But were they at all involved with it? And, you know, I tend to stay away from that personally, again, because I don't have the knowledge. But also because while we're wrapped up in talking about what did they do, what didn't they do, it is undeniable that they trounced on it now and gave us the Patriot Act, and people willingly handed over their rights, and that's an atrocity enough. But what if, from the big what if, and a while ago I found out about Dr. Judy Wood. And let me say that there's a lot of people who have a lot of theories about 9/11, and most of them have less scientific knowledge than I do, meaning they're in deep, deep, deep trouble. All right, so with that in mind, I kind of raise my jaundiced eyebrow and say, oh, really? Well, in the case of Dr. Judy Wood, she's a Ph.D., and she didn't get it from the back of a matchbook cover. Yeah, she didn't earn her degree by paying for it. We're talking serious schools. How about Virginia Tech? I'd go there. A B.S. in civil engineering, an M.S. in engineering mechanics, applied physics, and a Ph.D. in materials engineering science. On top of that, her dissertation was determination of thermal strains in the neighborhood of a bimaterial interface. This sounds like somebody who would know. This is also, when you look at her CV, somebody who has held very responsible positions, and many of them in a very politically charged atmosphere, meaning she was teaching. All right. And so this is somebody who has an awful lot to lose by going out there and saying, Houston, we got a problem, which, to paraphrase it, is exactly what we're looking at here. And so for somebody to put their career on the line, to put their academic credentials suddenly in question by those who want the status quo to be just that, I figure she's got to have a heck of a lot of evidence on her side. And so it is that she does. If you go to Dr. Judy Wood, you can read the Cliff Notes. Hopefully, if you're listening online, you're hearing the show because you've got it bookmarked. Yes, congratulations, I've told you. Bookmark it. If not, of course, that's like a tree falling in the wood. If there's nobody there to hear it, does it make a sound? So I won't bother to give you the URL if you're in need of it. Yeah, right. We can bypass that. But hopefully people will be at drjudywood.com, just like it sounds, and get that and join us. But I will let you know that I'm preserving this on a couple of methods. So hopefully one of them will work. You know how that is. And we will have this available online as well for downloading in the future. I don't know why my site is down, but we're not going to belabor that because we have an awful lot to cover. I've got a lot of questions, and as luck would have it, Judy has a lot of answers.
The Raleigh James Show.
And we welcome Dr. Judy Wood. I appreciate you taking time out to join us, Judy.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
I'm very intrigued by you because, as I was just saying, I think that anybody who has as much of a resume as you do, who puts themselves on the line like this, must have stumbled on something that they feel is so earth-shattering that they literally will put their career on the line. So tell me about how you came about to learn what you learned.
Well, start at the beginning, but first let me respond to that comment. When I really started getting into this and putting my career on the line, my mother said, well, you're not going to have a career anymore if you do that. And my response was, if I don't do it, I won't have a career.
Wow. Wow.
So
what were you thinking?
It's a win-win for me.
When you say if you don't do it, you won't have a career, were you thinking that if you didn't do it, nobody would have a career?
Correct. We might not have a planet.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
It's serious.
All right. So now let's now, obviously, with your dissertation, we know that you are certainly interested in thermal strains, and none of this is unusual to you. So when you see a building go down due to heat, supposedly anywhere, I'm sure it piques your interest. So what was your initial thoughts when you, like all of us, heard the news?
Well, I was at home that morning, and I had my alarm kick on, as my classes would start later in the day, and I taught an evening class, and my clock radio kicked on, and I heard some nonsense in the background. I thought it was just, you know, joke, but it never got to the punchline. And after a while, you know, after like 30 minutes of this, I went and turned on the TV and saw what was going on, and I flipped through all the different channels. And they all had the same thing.
Yeah.
That was where my suspicions began to rise. You know, if you have a plane crash, you have one station, you know, filming the scene, another station doing the up close and personal about somebody who took their loved ones to the airport that morning, and somebody else interviewing the parts manufacturer. You have, you know, a variety of things.
Yeah.
But we had the same image on every channel. Slightly different angle, but basically the same image. And then there were no commercial breaks.
Well, that part didn't actually surprise me, because normally in that type of a disaster, they're not going to cut away to commercials.
For days.
Well, but, you know, the days is an interesting thing, but certainly in that first 24 hours, I wouldn't have expected them to cut away for commercials, because being in broadcasting, I can tell you what all kind of hell would rain down on them if they cut away from that type of an event. But be that as it may, the idea, you know, initially everybody's focused on the same image because, of course, that makes sense. But you have a valid point. If you're saying 24 hours later everybody's focused on the same thing, that's a pretty interesting point.
And anyway, I heard something about the Pentagon. Well, my parents lived near the Pentagon, and my first impression was this is like an Orson Welles War of the Worlds thing. So it could be, so I need more data. So I called my mom and had her look out to see if she saw fighter jets overhead. You know, she lives near the Pentagon, and the Pentagon's attacked. You'd see fighter jets overhead, wouldn't you?
You know, that's the thing, one of the things that I think any layman has wondered about, too, from that standpoint, because by the time the Pentagon was a hit, you would have thought that everything was scrambling.
Correct. And my mom looked out and said, no, didn't see anything unusual. And I told her my thoughts, and she wasn't aware anything was going on that day. So how she was introduced to it was through skepticism.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, on the other hand, was out in his garden, and his neighbor who works at the Pentagon came home early and was traumatized, went running to him, and he became traumatized. And you know, he had a totally different frame of reference. And seeing that contrast really made a difference. Then I went into campus and ran into my graduate student on the way into the building, and he said, Dr. Wood, who's bin Laden and what's Al-Qaeda?
Interesting.
This is around 10 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
On 9/11.
Right.
He already has these names.
Right, they've already named somebody, yeah. Yeah. Now, were the names at all familiar to you?
I'd heard it. You know, you hear, you know, stuff about. They're always the first ones folks like to point the finger at.
Okay.
But it's like everyone grab your pitchforks and let's go get them.
Mm-hmm.
Rah rah rah! Get the stampede going.
Okay.
And some of my colleagues, when I got into the building, they said, "Yeah, we just got to go take them all out."
Uh huh.
They were busy focusing on, we got to get somebody for it. And I think the media somehow, or the imaging, corral people into that. And I asked them why, and they said, well, the buildings are both down. You know, apparently they went away while I was on my drive into campus.
Mm-hmm.
So we went into the faculty conference room and watched the reruns over and over again. I looked like, this is a joke. I looked around the room, and people looked at me like I was nuts.
Now, the people who were around the room, some of them were also structural engineers, correct?
Yes, mechanical engineering professors.
All right, and so they're buying it hook, line, and sinker at this point.
Yes, and I felt so alone that you wonder if you're in the Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
So I went up to my office and did some calculations because, wait, buildings don't unravel like a sweater. And, okay, how should it look? What would happen? I had different images, and one of which was like an avalanche, snowfall. You see something move here, something move there, and then pretty soon things start moving, but it doesn't move uniformly all at once.
So what?
It's not symmetrical.
What I'm hearing you saying is initially your first thoughts were almost social engineering thoughts in terms of, wait a minute, you know, the idea of the bin Laden thing and how television coverage was and all this. And then it causes you, I'm sure by the time you get to this point, we've not only had two towers, but we've already had the third building implode on itself. I assume at this point you say, I want to look at this from the standpoint of what I know from an engineering background.
Correct. And so I start doing some calculations, a very simplified model of just the timing. Tower 1 went away, I don't say collapsed, it went away in 8 seconds. That's in the official report. That's also referenced in the seismograph. The seismographic information shows that the ground shook for only 8 seconds, maximum. It was maybe even less than that.
Mm-hmm.
If you dropped a bowling ball off the roof of Tower 1 in a vacuum, no air resistance, it would take 9.22 seconds to hit the pavement. It would take longer.
So we're talking about something destroyed faster than general physics would explain.
Yes.
Now, at that point, I got to ask you, because that's, you know, certainly from the standpoint of somebody who's studied structural engineering all their life, that's a glaring fact that has to be reckoned one way or another. Regardless of what the ultimate conclusion is going to be, that should pique anybody's interest. Now, your esteemed professors there, they were willing to swallow something that went against everything they'd been teaching?
I think they just had turned off their thinking, and they were on this other bandwagon, just moving along with it. And it's an interesting phenomenon I've seen. It's people stop thinking. I grew up without a television, so that might have something to do with why I don't trust what I see on the television.
Well, I still come back to, again, and this is one of the things that blows me away, is that people who are schooled in this and who have basic assumptions that are root assumptions. They're the foundation for their body of knowledge. And here, they're seeing things like faster than, you know, physics has ever explained, or the midair pulverization turning to dust before they hit the ground. We'll get to that. It seems that after they came out of their collective shock, they immediately should have been on your bandwagon. Now, of course, we'll go through all of this, but if you were to look at it today, how many of them have hit the realization that one of two things has to happen here? Either this is not as explained, or everything they've been teaching is BS.
There's a subset of the first category. It's not as explained, but don't ask questions if you want to keep your career.
Okay, so then now we're hitting what I was afraid. You think some of these people are absolutely cognizant that this isn't as explained, but they're not willing to do what you're doing to put yourself out as an article of ridicule for those who want the status quo.
Correct.
All right.
They have a family. They have children.
Yeah.
You know,
whatever,
house,
yeah.
House payments.
Yeah, yeah. Or they did up till now, anyway. Yeah. So.
Yeah.
So here we are, and I'm sure at first there was a side of you that also looked at it, and maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but okay, it certainly looks fishy, but there must be some explanation somewhere, so I'm going to look further.
Yeah, I get out my pencil and paper, and I do some easy calculations, and wait, that doesn't make sense, but I'm trying to make the you know, official story work.
Right.
And I'm thinking, okay, I must be going crazy. I must have not remembered that, you know, the coefficient of gravity is 32.2 feet per second squared. So let me pull down some of my physics books to check those numbers. Well, maybe that's a typo in that book. Let me try this book. Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe it's a typo in that book, too. And I actually got out four books.
Okay.
Trying to find, you know, I'm trying to resolve the difference between, the distance between what I'm thinking and what I saw and what I'm seeing in my colleagues.
Right, right.
And it just wasn't working. But, hey, I'm a fairly new faculty member, and I want to keep my job, and, you know, you want to do what's socially acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty soon you start stuffing it. You start just holding it to your, keeping your thoughts to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what we were all doing to some extent.
Now, I assume during that that process, while you're saying, I don't think I'm going to voice this, you were continuing to research every facet of this, hoping to prove yourself wrong so you could put it to rest.
No, I was trying to get on with other things, but it was right there. And I kept, you know, thinking of these calculations and looking at them. And, you know, there are people who are supposed to look into this. You know, the grown-ups would take care of this. It was that kind of idea. I'll
mm-hmm.
take care of my work, my job.
Mm-hmm.
And the grown-ups will take care of this mess.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody else is going to look into it. Well, as you know, we had that, what do you call it, the presidential selection that went belly up in 2000. And at the end of that, they said, well, we'll get it right next time. You know, we can't fix this one, but we'll fix the 2004 selection. And so when it came to that night, what was it, November 2nd or 3rd, 2004, and it went belly up, that's when I realized the grown-ups weren't going to take care of it.
Well, what we're looking at here at this point for this election, for instance, is one-third of the voting machines do not have a paper trail. One-third. So that means regardless of how it comes out, no American should be able to look at this and say, I feel confident that these were the way people voted, because we'll never know.
Right, right. And when the statistics don't agree with the numbers that are tallied up, like, you know, from the various exit polls, when there's such a discrepancy by, you know, several standard deviations, and the one that really got to me was this the rain in Ohio at this particular precinct where these people stood for, what, 8 hours in the rain waiting to vote, and when they got in there, only 7, that's single digit, 7% of them voted for any presidential candidate.
At all.
The rest of them, they were there to vote for, you know, county dog catcher or whatever.
Right. Right. So clearly, hang on a minute, Judy, that kind of stuff is not about partisan politics and did your guy win or did the other guy win. It's just that increasingly you see that what they're telling us doesn't add up to reality. And again, mention Ohio. The Secretary of State said none of those voting machines could be certified as being accurate. And what happens? Of course, they're used. And then the Secretary of State currently says, oh, they're just fine. Yeah, ignore the man behind the curtain. So that would, if you have nagging questions in your mind about something else, particularly when it doesn't jive with what you know, cause you to say, I got to look at this. I wanted to set that up because I know there's a lot of people who will say, ah, well, this woman's just Fruit Loops. I mean, that's the general reaction because, of course, if you can believe that, then you don't have to be involved. But we're not dealing with somebody who is a few cans short of a six-pack. So now we're going to pick it up to find out more about that research coming up in a moment on The Raleigh James Show. That's a world of fantasy, all right. We got Dr. Judy Wood, drjudywood.com. And everybody who's emailing, I'm sending you the permanent link to the stream, which hopefully you would have had bookmarked, but I understand that Dr. Wood has it on her site, too. So, yeah, several people saying it's a conspiracy. No, I think it's just a bad shared Linux server. All right. That said, however, some things not quite as easy to dismiss, and we will get to them. Dr. Wood, of course, has every reason to know when you look at her Ph.D. dissertation alone. Determination of thermal strains in the neighborhood of a bimaterial interface. Yeah, I'd think that that apart from the official version not jiving with, reality, is the fact that that this is almost like a real-world example of everything that she's studying, and either everything that we know is wrong, or, in fact, perhaps there's a little more to the story. We'll go with a little more to the story part, and we're going to pick it up right there. And we've got Dr. Judy Wood with us, drjudywood.com, just like it sounds. And so here you are, and I assume that as the years go by and you're keeping quiet, at some point you realize that this is undeniable. Now, before we talk about that, let me ask you, why did you think coming forth was going to truly jeopardize you in the academic community?
Well, up to that point, why hadn't anyone else spoken out?
Okay. So more than...
And you we're herd animals.
Okay.
We look and see what the rest of the herd is doing.
Okay.
And we don't want to stick out.
Okay. Yeah, I can understand that. So now here we are, and I assume your first in terms of scientific, as we were saying, is, wait a minute, the coefficient of gravity doesn't add up. So here you have the 8 seconds. What do you discover next?
You look at the, quote, debris field.
Mm-hmm.
Where's the building? Where'd the building go?
Okay.
You look and it's at ground level. There's a photo I have of a fellow standing at street level just before noon on 9/11. You know what day it is because in the background there's Building 7 still standing.
Okay.
It didn't stand after that day.
Right.
And here you are, ground level, and you see this 8-story building, Building 6, in front of you, but to the right you should have this big tower obstructing your view of Building 7.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not there. 110 stories down to a quote, rubble pile, this less than 1 story tall. What's going on here?
Yeah.
And then you look at more and more images, and you realize, wait, this is paper in the street and dust.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you look at it, the more weird things you start noticing. I started making a list of the different anomalies. And one thing I'll warn the listeners about, I use a unique language for a reason. If we see this hazy air and you call it smoke, you think fire and you assume fire and you move on. You don't question it. But if you call it fumes or, you know, some other term that doesn't have a specific meaning, it's a placeholder that represents that phenomenon. And then until you know what exactly the process is. So I develop, you know, fuzzballs, fuzzy blobs, wheat checks, you know, various terms that just represent different things. And that puts you in a different frame of thinking, where you're freer to think without the biasness of falling into, you know, rubble pile. People talk about ground zero and the pile. What pile? You assume there's a pile because you say it so many times. And we've heard about the pile. But is it a pile when you can look from east to west through the complex at street level with an unobstructed view?
Yeah, it's one thing that I think bypasses a lot of people. You say, wait a minute, this is a 110-story building, and it's going to collapse, and at the very least, its collapsed portion should be there. And so the official explanation was mid-air pulverization, that things turned to dust before they hit the ground. Now, considering your doctoral thesis or dissertation, I assume that you know whether that's possible.
Well, in order to get a building to turn to dust, it has to slam against something rigid. Air is not rigid. So if you have this beam that's flying through the air, what is causing it to turn to dust before it hits the ground?
Right, because it was standing after the plane hit it. I mean, the plane's solid, but it was standing after that.
Well, I don't even make an assumption about a plane because we don't know
what it was.
We really saw,
well,
or what we heard, what we were told we thought. We saw, I say there's a hole in the building. The building got a hole.
Right, okay. But, I mean, something, in some level, something hit it, had an initial impact. And
it got a hole somehow. That something, you know, it was disturbed. And we saw this what appeared to be a fireball. We don't know what temperature it was and if it really was a fireball. Something happened to it.
Now,
and you can see how we have all these assumptions we've made. But if you start looking at things carefully, if the building wilted from heat, and this is actually a pop quiz I gave to one of my classes, your multiple choice, and you hear them reading down to the multiple choices, and pretty soon they start giggling. You know, I gave this analogy of you get a bunch of, you want to, let's say over a campfire, you want to heat up a pot of water to a boil.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this big pot of water. You need a grill, so you get a bunch of old metal coat hangers and wad them up and put them over your fire and put the pot on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as the fire, you know, heats up and the water starts heating up, what's going to happen? Is the thing going to just sit there and nothing happen? Or is the pot going to gradually start sagging down? Or are the coat hanger sections going to break into neat little sticks and just suddenly go flying in all directions?
Mm-hmm.
Or will the coat hanger suddenly just instantly turn to dust and the pot slams to the ground?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one is what we saw.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Well, what?
That the steel support suddenly turned to dust.
Right. Right.
Instantly.
To dust. Now, what I found interesting about that is, let's just assume for a moment, the layperson who doesn't know if steel can turn to dust easily, let's assume steel does turn to dust. We would assume that steel cannot turn to dust unless the seismic activity would be certainly indicating that it wasn't the same as other minor, shall we say, or very controlled explosions. Or how is it that that can turn to dust and other parts, like the underground mall, are absolutely unaffected? I won't say absolutely, but light damage.
Yeah, not significant.
Right.
You know, the bathtub. Let's tell the listeners how the buildings were built. That part of Manhattan used to be underwater.
Mm-hmm.
They started filling it in and brought up, you know, made more land.
Right.
So if you're going to build a 110-story building, you need to put it on bedrock.
Right.
Bedrock is 7 stories down below the ground. So you have the basement of the building is below the water table. Then there's this water retaining wall called the bathtub all around the two towers. And in that bathtub is the PATH train stations, the Port Authority Trans Hudson.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Train that's been there for 100 years or so,
right,
going from New Jersey under the Hudson. It comes up into the base of the bathtub on that bedrock. And so that's got to be a watertight bathtub.
Right.
You slam two 500,000-ton buildings onto it and nothing happens to it?
Well, right there, that tests credibility, especially if you're accepting that steel turns to dust. You can't really accept both of those concepts simultaneously.
People say, "Well, you get a lot of forces banging down, hitting." If you are driving your car at 70 miles an hour and you come upon in the middle of the highway a car out of gear just parked in the middle of the highway and you hit it, you're going to survive it. You might mess up your car as long as you don't flip over and go off into the ditch. But if you hit a brick wall at 70 miles an hour where the wall did not give,
mm-hmm,
you probably aren't going to survive. There's a different level of impact because if the vehicle you hit is out of gear, it just bounces off. There's no resistance.
Right.
If you have a beam flying through the air with no resistance, how can it be damaged? It needs to slam against a rigid foundation.
And if
you have the 110th floor, bangs down the 109th floor, bangs down the 108th floor, what is supporting it? You have to have a rigid foundation. Why does the rigid foundation stop at ground level? And below that, it's untouched. So if you're just destroying each floor by this impacting, why doesn't it keep destroying it all the way down to the bedrock?
Well, of course, they'd say because it turned to dust. It never got to the ground. And that, of course, implies something that also is not, from what I understand, based upon research such as yours, possible.
Why would it still just spontaneously turn to dust?
You tell me. I mean, what? Obviously, I assume, now here's a bad thing, an assumption, but I assume that in addition to what people were spoon-fed on the nightly news or what have you, that there had to be another version that has been told to scientists. Now, I realize a lot of them, like yourself, are saying it's bogus, including a lot of people in Utah and some other places. But was there anything in detail ever presented that would have tried to explain, albeit maybe poorly, what was going on from a scientific point?
No. I think I can be fairly confident in that. And that's another issue. NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, had this big study for, 5 years or 4 years, and came out with this report as to what happened into the World Trade Center. They called it the collapse, you know, of the towers.
Mm-hmm.
I took issue with that title because they did not study the collapse, so they're not entitled to call it a collapse. And if you get to looking at the report, it turns out the report is just filled with mumbo-jumbo, like, inventory of, you know, what ingredients went into building the thing and, you know, who picked up this pencil and walked from point A to point B. Just nothing to do with what happened to the towers.
Mm-hmm.
And then I filed a request for corrections to NIST about this and, you know, various other issues. They came back and told me, oh, well, it didn't have to obey the laws of physics of a collapse because we didn't study the collapse. We just studied the building until it quit standing. So as long as the building was still standing, it was obeying the laws of physics. Not study what happened to the building.
So that's incredulous, to say the least, that they're saying, well, we only looked at it while it was there. It was obeying the laws of physics then. And, of course, that begs you to come back and say, you mean to tell me nobody looked at it after it started to fall?
They didn't include that evidence.
I assume you didn't, you know, take that letter and say, okay, you tried to go further. Have you been just hitting stone walls? Have you gotten responses?
I continued on with a QTAM case.
Yeah.
Because the contractors who worked on that report knew full well what they were dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And they signed a fraudulent report, and that's fraud.
Okay.
For example, Underwriters Lab did a mock-up test of one floor, a full-scale model as well as something less.
Yeah.
But in a full-scale model, they have this fire that burned hotter than anything could have, longer than anything could have, and it wouldn't fail. This is in their, you know, test, the actual physical test they did. They couldn't get it to fail, and they called the test after a couple hours because the thing didn't fail. So that test shows them that the report cannot be true.
Right.
So what are they doing signing a fraudulent report?
So you filed a QUITAM, and which is a perfect vehicle for that. Has that suit ever been heard, or was it roundly dismissed, or what happened?
It was dismissed at the first level, and it's now on appeal.
Okay. Okay. So.
And I have documents regarding that on my website that folks can feel free to look at.
Okay, drjudawood.com. Yeah.
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 The link at the very top of the page for the QTAM cases.
Good. Good. Of course, we've been hearing a lot about various cases lately that seem to go absolutely nowhere if the courts or the judges or what have you decide that they're going nowhere. What do you think the likelihood is that this case will truly see the light of day?
I don't know, and I don't want to speculate, but what I would like to say is that if you want a legal system, you need to use it. Instead of assume that it's not going to work for you.
Well, right.
Use it or lose it. So I want to have faith that we have a system that works.
Well, certainly when you're a republic, which we are, not a democracy, a republic stands on the rule of law. And my fear, though, is that it will stand no more than the World Trade Center, because what you're discovering, certainly from a scientific standpoint, is at every turn you're getting things like the report you filed Quitam on. So we're going to pick it up right there and find out more. You can go to drjudywood.com, not only read the suit, but take a look at the principal data that must be explained. That's sort of what we're running down at the moment. There's 41 points that are interesting. And I find this fascinating. Again, I suspend disbelief because I personally, it's not my field of endeavor. But anybody who thinks that the Patriot Act was written on September 12th, yeah, we got a lot more to talk about. So clearly they were ready to capitalize on something. Now the question is, and we're not really even asking what is their involvement. We're asking, does the official explanation work? And you can see that it doesn't, so we'll pick it up right there.
It's the Raleigh James Show. Paranoid to the max. The Raleigh James Show.
I'm saving you the trouble. No, it's getting crowded, all right. Crowded with information that makes you certainly have questions, if not conclusions, about the official 9/11 story. And when you're a structural engineer and everything you've ever been taught and everything you know from experience is counter to the official explanation, well, you've got a story to tell, and that story is Dr. Judy Woods, and we're talking to her tonight. You can go to drjudywood.com, and if you email, many people have, with your thoughts, I'll certainly incorporate the questions. I'll check it every segment anyway, so that would be R-O-L-L-Y-E at R-O-L-L-Y-E dot N-E-T, so feel free to use that. But we haven't even gotten to building 7 yet, but we will, as far as that goes, because I think that's one that most of us have seen over the years, a controlled demolition. And they're fascinating in their own way. But what's most interesting about it is they don't always go exactly according to plan, and then they're usually pretty neat. But if Building 7 wasn't a controlled explosion, then I give up. But that's exactly where we'll pick that up.
The Raleigh James Show.
And we're back to Dr. Judy Wood. It's drjudywood.com. And so on top of everything else, here comes Building 7. And as I say, anybody who's seen a controlled demolition has to think that this is even better.
Right. It's so good that, you know, how could it be?
Right.
But there's some other tricks to it. When you have a controlled demolition, all you're doing is cutting the supports, so the building drops to the ground and it smashes up when it slams to the ground. We had buildings that didn't slam to the ground.
Including Building 7?
Including Building 7. Building 7 even more so.
It never made it to the ground?
Correct.
It just
vaporized?
It blew
away before it did.
Now let me ask you, Judy, apart from the official story, how could they have done that?
A new technology. It has to be. The more you look at it, you start seeing some of the defining qualities of this new technology. But you have to open your eyes and observe. For example, Building 7. When you look at the seismograph, you really have a tough time picking out the signal from the background noise. And something I ripped the NIST folks apart on is that very thing. They used the lack of loud noise to dismiss controlled demolition with bombs in the building.
Mm-hmm.
But if they applied that to their own explanation, they'd have to dismiss their own explanation as well.
Right, because there was no seismic signal for the building itself, is what you're saying.
And there's no loud noises. They had these various cameras videotaping it, and you could hear low-level conversations across the street and a block away, 2 blocks away. In other words, they weren't drowned out by this 47-story building crashing to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
If the building doesn't make a loud thud when it hits, did it hit the ground?
Well, yeah, that's like I joke about the tree falling in the forest if nobody's here. But unfortunately, there were millions of people in Manhattan, so you would think vibrationally it would not only register, but it would be audible.
Yeah, it would be like, lots of dump trucks. Think of a dump truck as like 10,000 pounds each. And so that's, 10 tons each. That's like 10,000 dump trucks spread over that volume. And they should all be slamming to the ground. It should be like raining dump trucks. You know, when one drives down the road, you hear it clatter as it, goes along. That's a loud noise.
So we're,
there's a lot of mass.
So we're talking no debris for the most part, and no noise. Now that had to flummox you when you noticed that, and so
it didn't even spill across the street.
Right. So
the postal building that's is three lanes across the other side of the street. Right after the event, you could still walk on the sidewalk.
So what can this be?
A new technology that turns things to dust.
And obviously since then you've tried to look at what this could be.
Yeah, I didn't start out looking at what it could be because that's something that ends up getting into trouble. If you only know about a slingshot, a BB gun, and a firecracker, you go eeny, meeny, miny, moe and try to fit a square peg in a round hole.
Right.
Instead, I just looked at the data. You look at the evidence long enough, and it speaks to you. It tells you what happened. You just have to open your eyes and observe it. So here we have one of the best pictures. I've named some. I call this the fuzzball intersection. It's a block north of the complex, and the picture was taken about 15 minutes after Tower 1 went away. We're upwind, and 15 minutes after Tower 1 goes poof, the dust has settled. The coarse dust has settled, and you have a nice blue sky in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Clear blue sky. The dust has settled. And then, you start noticing around the ground, you have this very fine dust around people's feet lifting up. That's why I call them fuzzballs,
mm-hmm.
around each of the feet. And then, after a little bit more time, you notice it's rising all on its own. So it isn't just being kicked up. But in 15 minutes' time, if the dust was that fine, it could not have settled out of the air.
What is that?
It had to have landed as coarse dust and then became fine dust.
And what does that tell you?
That something is causing the material to break down and continue to break down.
Now, something that I found interesting in your research, and again, I'm absolutely a layperson, so I don't know. But windows of nearby buildings had circular holes in them. What could... Because normally you'd think, okay, an explosion, windows shatter. I expect the windows to shatter. But you're not talking shatter. You're talking are there, when in some cases with circular or other geometric holes in them.
Yeah, they look like lace. It looks like somebody took a soldering iron and melted a hole through them.
And what could that be?
Longitudinal waves.
Tell me about that.
A type of energy wave would do that. Now, I like to compare that with things that we know. I think we've all seen a baseball go through a window. Oops. it makes this spider web kind of pattern. It has, circular, and radial lines around where the baseball goes through.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't just make a round hole the shape of a baseball and nothing else.
Right.
Unless it's a Roadrunner cartoon. They tend to have, a new kind of physics in there.
Yeah, no, you're right about that. And any kid who's ever put a baseball through a window knows one of two things happens, assuming it goes through the window. Either the whole thing just shatters, or what you're describing as far as the impact pattern that's pretty well known is the result. And you can actually see that when somebody puts their head through the windshield, too, as far as that goes. So it's pretty predictable what happens. But when I heard that there were just holes with no other impact pattern around them, I couldn't imagine. Longitudinal waves, I love that. Now, but so now we're really talking about the kind of physics that, like you say, is not, as far as we know, in use anywhere.
Right, and I wasn't aware of it until I began looking at this evidence, but this evidence told me that it does exist. Now, my background is in interferometry, using visual, you know, images, optical interference in the visual range, but it's still interference of energy. But I could use that and see that what I saw in the vehicles, there were some vehicles on FDR Drive that were mighty weird. I've come to call these toasted cars,
okay.
Not necessarily meaning, you know, the cause, the, that they're burned, but they're toast, they're history. They're
mm-hmm.
And there's a police car with a sagging door. It looks, you know, torched around the side, except for a nice round circle that's pristine. Another one is cooked the front half, but the back half still has its new wax job. It's as though there's an abrupt line, you know, like masking tape. Line.
I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
That's something that can be done with, you know, photographic interference. You know, masking something in the
mm-hmm.
dark room.
Mm-hmm.
It's whether or not the light gets past that point. That is not a normal car fire that does that. So if you have interference of different energy waves, you can have constructive and destructive interference and have something be disrupted here and then a millimeter over not be disrupted.
Right.
And that's when I first began thinking of some kind of energy beam. And then you start looking more. Okay, folks say, well, what about the bridge supports? These toasted police cars and so forth were underneath an overpass
mm-hmm.
over an FDR Drive. Actually, they're underneath FDR Drive.
Right.
Well, if you look at the supports for this overpass, they go into the ground. They're
mm-hmm.
grounded.
Mm-hmm.
The police car is up on rubber tires.
Mm-hmm.
It's not grounded. That's just, you know, okay, that's a difference. Now let's go back over to the World Trade Center complex and look, and there's these few remaining columns. I call them wheat checks. They look like them. And there's a photographer that initially started calling them that. It's these prefabricated three columns wide by three stories tall
mm-hmm.
sections that they made the Trade Center out of.
Right.
You've seen them around, so I call it wheat checks. So these things are, you know, sticking up out of the ground, and nothing else is around.
Mm-hmm.
They're grounded. So that could be a reason why it stops at ground level.
Interesting.
And you start noticing more, you know, trends with this, and I kept going on and on with all my different categories until I came upon, first, we were talking about molten metal. Well, there isn't. You can't have molten metal at the bottom of a swimming pool. And the whole site was saturated, and the talk of molten metal is such a distraction. You know, constantly having to answer people about that. Because water, when it turns to steam, it expands in volume by 1,600 times. And that's why things blow up. That's why Chernobyl blew up.
Mm-hmm.
It was a steam explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking of, you know, how water, when it turns to steam, it's like all the little molecules want to repel each other. And I'm saying, wonder if we can apply that to the building. And I'm looking at a picture of Tower 2 when the top starts tipping. You see all of this stuff, like the building just turns to foam and starts, like every molecule wants to reject its neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
And I started searching for an explanation for that, and I came upon the Casimir effect and the work of John Hutchison. And I looked at his website, his blog, and various other information, and I was my jaw was on the ground.
Right.
It matched every single one of the phenomena that I had tabulated.
So tell me about their research.
It's a different kind of physics than we're taught in school.
Right.
It's following the work of Nikola Tesla.
Right.
Which is another interesting thing in itself, that here's the person who brought us alternating current Why isn't he in our physics books?
Oh, yeah. No, he's routinely called a nut. And, of course, much of what we're dealing with today we can trace to Tesla. That's well known. But you're telling me when you were in school, Tesla never came up?
Correct. I don't remember hearing much about Tesla. You hear some, you know, in the background, but it was never something we studied.
Yeah, he was.
And it's you know, really suppressed. And this can't be an accident. Anyway, I began looking at the work of John Hutchison, and I'm not saying that it explains exactly what happened, but it's the same physics, the same phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the toasted cars, well, he has, you know, the same equivalent thing. Picture of he has a toy boat with, mm-hmm. you know, spontaneous combustion. What's burning on it? Paper doesn't burn, but vehicles look like they're burning. Iridescence, luminescence, and cast iron engine blocks go poof where the rest of the car doesn't. The gas tank is still intact.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hot. Remember when the dust cloud rolled down the street? I think we all have seen those pictures of the guy, you know, running down the cloud chasing him.
Right.
The cloud overtook, you know, people and passed on by, and what you were left with is people covered with dust.
Right.
You didn't have burned bodies.
What was interesting when I was reading your points at point 22 was that these people reported not only were they not burning, but that the dust cloud felt cooler than the ambient temperatures. Now, some people who were hearing that were thinking about it at forming overhead, saying, well, it blocked out the sun. But that's not what we're talking about at all here. And so, given any rational explanation, if this were, in fact, a debris cloud from a burning building, that would have had to be hotter.
Yeah, and the ambient temperature would be elevated slightly.
At least. And depending on
and
how
we
far,
never saw yeah. any burnt bodies stacked up on the sidewalk or whatever. It just didn't happen.
Yeah, it's as if people were vaporized. Now,
yeah, the cars that you saw looked like they were on fire, or some aluminum that looked like it was burnt or glowing. Is a firefighter who's walking through it. He's not worried about a fire. Who would choose to walk through a fire rather than around it? And the paper isn't burning.
Now, with that, the thing that I wondered about was actually when they, whatever happened with the plane in Pennsylvania, this was another case where there were absolutely no bodies at the scene. And I have had people in my life killed in commercial plane crashes. And I'll tell you what, the bodies were recovered, not necessarily in good form, but even those that crashed into the side of the Andes, the bodies came back. So how was it with regard to that particular plane that everything vaporized?
Or disappeared.
Yeah.
Yeah. Out of all four, quote, plane crashes, there's no identifiable parts.
Yeah, including the one that you know, crashed away from the site in a field. How could there not be an identifiable part? Now, obviously, some people have said, oh, no, that can happen. So you have certainly the background to know. Can that happen?
I've never seen it happen. Never. There's no evidence of it. I think we've all seen plane crashes, and you have called the carcass, you know, of the fuselage. It's
right.
There, and there's a piece of wing over here, and you got a tire over there, some burned stuff here. Things are recognizable. Actually, the one over Lockerbie that was bombed,
right.
They got all the pieces and put them back together.
Exactly.
To figure out what happened. And then they had another plane that it was ready for the plane graveyard, I guess. And they tried to blow it up the same way to see if they could reproduce
yeah.
the results, and
yeah.
they did.
Yeah.
That's what they do to analyze.
Right, of course.
You know, things
right.
that happen.
Right.
Has anyone tried to make a plane disappear?
Well, that and the fact that that's not a question is the really frightening part. So we'll pick it up right there. DrJudyWood.com, just like it sounds. And, you know, it's interesting because when you start to talk about this, most of the people who are saying that 9/11 was an inside job do not on any level have the scientific background to argue their points. And almost all of them across the board are more about how, quote-unquote, the government did it or what have you, rather than we're dealing with a technology that heretofore has not been in any kind of common usage so that people were aware of it. That makes it all the more intriguing. And by the way, when you think about it, and we'll get back to this, does not necessarily claim that that part of the official explanation couldn't have happened. I don't know. We're just talking about it getting a lot of help it wasn't expecting. So we'll pick it up right there. Now, we got some confusion, all right. We got Dr. Judy Wood, drjudywood.com, just as it sounds. And interesting, as expected, a hot topic as far as your emails go. And I'll try and incorporate some of your questions as well. Raleigh at Raleigh.net, R-O-L-L-Y-E at Raleigh.net. But a number of people who do not want the status quo shattered. Now, I find it fascinating that this is much less of a discussion about it being, quote-unquote, an inside job with regard to who perpetrated 9/11, but rather that regardless that it's impossible that it happened the way it was explained. Now, many of us have come to that point that we're saying, well, it's impossible it happened that way. What we're hearing from Dr. Judy Wood is that it's impossible it happened any way that human beings at this point, at least in widespread use, understand. Now, you got to admit that's fascinating, but think of all the questions you have about this. And, you know, some people are figuring, well, I just wasn't there. Well, I don't understand this or that. Well, you know, it's been explained. No, to the satisfaction of hard scientists, it really hasn't been explained. And again, I guess the real question to me, big time real question, is then how on God's green earth aren't the engineering departments of schools nationwide joining Judy in this? And of course, there are some scattered people who do. But by and large, I think that gets back to human nature and not wanting to have your paradigm exploded, so to speak. So we'll pick it up there in minutes. And we're talking to Dr. Judy Wood, and it gets even more interesting because, again, what I find fascinating is you're not coming at it from, oh, the government did this and they're not telling us. You're coming at it from, however this happened, it's a technology we don't now know.
Yes, and if you're going to do finger pointing, you need to know what you're going to accuse somebody of, you know, what got done.
Right.
You know, before you figure out who done it.
Which is, you know, that's so fascinating because almost all the different, quote-unquote, 9/11 conspiracies focus on who did it, not what was done. And here you are saying this is not possible.
If you, you know, take somebody into court and charge them with murdering someone by stabbing them to death, and then it turns out the body has bullet holes in it.
Right.
The criminal gets off scot-free.
Right.
For life. This thing about double jeopardy. So you need to figure out what the crime is first.
Now, one of the things that we had been told, in fact, I got an email about this, is that underground there were very hot fires. Is that true? And because it was my understanding that a lot of the stuff underground was perfectly standing.
Yes, and there's various stories of the Ground Zero workers who had damp, wet, you know, it was, you know, sloshing around in the wet, because all the fire hoses hosing down the debris, and then also it's open to rainwater. All the water goes someplace,
mm-hmm.
And it goes down to the bottom. Now, you know, can you store molten metal at the bottom of your swimming pool? Can fire exist under water? And you start looking at the images on rainy days. You don't have the fuming coming up off the pile.
Mm-hmm.
It comes off the pile on a sunny day. So you realize wherever they're dumping water, sprinkling water on it, misting it, that holds down this whatever it is that's making the fumes come up. There's a fascinating picture. I call it the Gestapo picture because it looks like there's an armed guard there. It looks like he's probably Gestapo.
Mm-hmm.
At the bottom of, I believe it's WTC-1, months into the cleanup, they're bringing in dirt and dumping it on the site, more and more dirt, and pretty soon you're just left with this dirt pile at the bottom. Dirt pile that they're wetting down with a hose, is misting it, and so there's this rainbow in the picture. The dirt is so saturated the water is leaching out of it and making a little puddle. So the dirt's completely wet, You have a water puddle there, yet the wet dirt is fuming.
Well,
it's bizarre.
Exactly. And we go on some of the columns that were curled around a vertical axis, looking like rolled up carpets. Wouldn't normally, something that was prone to a heat problem just buckle?
Yeah, they'd bend over with a kink in it.
Right, horizontally.
It's like a soda pop can. If you're standing on it and you crush it, it buckles, with the vertical parts bending over.
Right.
But what we find with those rolled up carpet things, the wheat checks were curled around a vertical axis, and they're still straight as an arrow.
Now, we were talking about the vertical holes in the windows, which is just fascinating. The circles without any type of pressure lines other than that. There were also round holes in building 4, 5, and 6. Now, what's up with that?
Like 24-foot diameter ones, as though somebody took a post hole digger and just removed the material. And building 6 was actually a series of these holes that coalesced. You see circular or cylindrical cutouts around the edges of the hole, but like 50% of the building's volume is missing. Just gone, down to ground level.
You know, it's almost the thing that leaves you speechless, because, again, as I was saying, we've all seen plane crashes and reports of plane crashes and coverage, and they don't completely vaporize, period. Yet people were willing to accept this. Now, with regard to what happened in Lower Manhattan, people are told, well, there's never been anything of this catastrophic dimension, therefore, yeah, this stuff can happen. But it seems that anybody with an engineering background would have the exact same questions you do, that this is in plain sight.
But this is a psychological operation. And people were traumatized that day. When you're traumatized in this confusion and chaos, you do what you're told. You know, when police yell, get down on the ground, get down on the ground, people get down on the ground. They don't say why. Why should they don't stop and think critically about it. They just get in line. And if you're told a piece of information on the fly, you have no choice but to believe it. Famous thing is a movie theater when somebody cries fire. People stampede to the door. They don't stop to see if there is fire.
Of course.
And it's that same type of panic response. And once, you're away from that day, in order to reevaluate, you have to look back. And who wants to look back at a traumatic situation?
Mm-hmm.
They just assume that what they're told was correct and move on. And then if everyone around them is, got the same story, they feel comfortable with that and don't want to upset the status quo.
Now, you have in your points eyewitness testimony about a plane that turned into a midair fireball moments before hitting something. Now, what is that about?
It was Patricia Androvic. I was running down VC Street, and, someone said, oh, there's another plane coming in, and, looking for, worrying about it, what's on someone's mind. And over New Jersey, she described a plane that there was, three planes, and then the middle one turned into a fireball and went away.
Did anybody, that's the kind of stuff that's just so out there. Did anyone else see this?
I don't recall that one, but she also described the vehicles that were like spontaneous combustion.
Right.
It was blowing up as she ran past them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of descriptions of that.
Right, right. Now, there were magnometer readings in Alaska. And that were showing that there was a shift in the Earth's magnetic field. Now, how would that tie into this?
It's another just piece of evidence that when the North Tower got its hole, I guess that was 8:46 a.m., for about 20 minutes before then, there was a swing in all of the six recording stations,
mm-hmm.
and the values were dropping. And precisely at 8:46, they turn around and start heading up. And precisely at whenever it was the South Tower got its hole, they abruptly level off. And then Tower 2 goes poof, and right there is when they abruptly start down. And they drop, make this huge drop when Tower 1 goes poof. And then they're all haywire all afternoon until Building 7 goes poof. And then they're almost back to normal.
Building 7.
So we have five events, and they line up, the timing lines up with the magnetometer data.
Right. Right. And Building 7 to me is still the mystery, not only because it was looked like the best controlled demolition we'd ever seen, forgetting about the things that you're adding that, hey, nothing came to the ground, but just realizing that even going with an actual explanation, there was no seeming reason that Building 7 would fall. So that now you're saying that the disturbances, the recordable disturbances, stop after it did fall. Now, obviously, now I'm into conjecture here because you can't possibly know, but what do you think is the tie-in?
Well, I'm just looking at the data, just the facts, ma'am.
Right.
But if speculate a little bit, I would think there's a correlation between the magnetometer readings and what happened to Building 7. So after Tower 1 went poof, all those readings are just haywire all over the place. And if you notice all afternoon, Building 7 was lathering up and fuming and whatever you want to call it. This thick stuff pouring out of just one face of the building. We only had a 5-mile-an-hour wind that day. But it looks like it's just getting pulled out like a vacuum cleaner, sucking out this thick, opaque, whitish-gray lather. And I'm starting to realize, I wonder if that's the building, the mass of the building that was going away. We had the outer walls of the building still standing, but the inner part, was it just dissolving and going out that one face of the building? Because when the building did go away, I can't say drop because it didn't really drop. The seismic impact they said is a 0.6 on the Richter scale. That's equivalent to a jackhammer.
Right. So that's the other factor is that there it seemed there were no, again, in the kind of physics that we understand, verifiable data from what people were even witnessing.
Yeah, and people didn't talk about, you know, any noise, any racket. They weren't aware that the building went poof. And as for bombs in the building or, you know, conventional controlled demolition, all that does is break the support. You'd still need that mass to slam to the ground. It did not slam to the ground. Powder floats to the ground like snow. It doesn't slam to the ground.
Now,
so this...
That's exactly right, and that again, that's the same thing that we're seeing from the plane, which of course was, you know, in a field away from all of this. That it seems undeniable that it can't just vaporize, but it vaporized pretty much. That there was nothing.
Well, that's what we're told. There was a plane there. You know, there's a lot of We know we haven't gotten the correct story. The best thing to do is just wipe the table clean and start over. Don't make any assumptions. You think they told us the right story about this and the wrong story about that, the right thing about this and the wrong thing. You know, pretty soon you don't know what was what. So just forget what you're told and just look at what the evidence says.
Which, of course, begs yet another question that you can't answer, I don't think, because this is not anything that would be observable, but we know that those planes took off with those people on them. We do know that. And so the question is, where did they go?
Well, yeah, I haven't looked into that. I just know that, you know, airplanes don't make cookie-cutter cutouts in buildings
right.
In the shape of an airplane.
Right. No, I understand. That's why I said I thought this was out of the scope of your work, but that also would, you know, raise a very big question of, you know, where did these planes go? That's somewhat frightening to even have conjecture. Now, what is really interesting, on the one hand, we're talking about the lack of high heat and the witnesses reporting that the dust cloud was cooler than the ambient temperature, yet we have smoldering fires for 7 years, or smoldering something.
We're told they're fires.
Yeah.
We're told they're fires.
Let's look at that.
There's, I call it fuming. You know, you can have chemical fumes, or you can have fumes from smoldering fire. To me, that was a generic term that covered it without misleading it.
Mm-hmm.
And first off, I mentioned about the coarse dust landing and then breaking down finer and rising up.
Mm-hmm.
And you had this fuming of the streets that afternoon. Then pretty soon, the next pictures I'm seeing, in sequence, there's street cleaners going up and down the streets. What are they doing filling the streets with street cleaners when they need to be getting emergency vehicles through? It looks like they even scrubbed it with a toothbrush. Down the little grooves in the pavement were scrubbed out. So I'm thinking, okay, people might be starting to ask questions if they see the streets fuming, so they got to get rid of that. But the WFC buildings had grass lawns. What are you going to do with that? How are you going to deal with it? You can't run a street cleaner over the lawn. And I found some pictures. It's just a few days after the event, I guess it's actually 2 days after the event. There's brand new potting soil dumped on the lawn. Why would they bring in dirt and cover up the lawn with this moist potting soil? Then I started looking around the complex, and by golly, they brought in dirt almost immediately.
Now,
there's piles of dirt all over the place.
The most fascinating thing about this, looking at it as a whole, is that there are so many questions here that at the very least you would expect some type of quote-unquote cover-up data. The idea that you're just told, well, we didn't look at it after the buildings began to fall, that just doesn't hold any water whatsoever.
Do you know the line of work of the contractors who helped with the NIST report?
I know absolutely nothing other than what, you know, has been told to all of us.
The largest manufacturers of directed energy weapons for the military-industrial complex.
And then, of course, it begs, and again, this is out of the scope of what you're talking about, it begs the question of, well, why on earth would they decide that they were going to try these out on us? Other than, again, that neatly goes back into, well, it explains why.
I'm not saying who necessarily tried them out, but if these people are, you know, design and build, you know, directed energy weapons, they sure know what they look like when they use them. They've tested them.
Well, the interesting thing, again, looking at it, I don't want to say anecdotally, but trying to put pieces together, is when we start to talk about that all planes were ordered down and things of this nature, there's many things that would lead you to believe that at the very least that our government was aware, even if we're not saying complicit. So, like you, I don't know who did what, but now we're also saying that we have no idea what's been done other than what we're trying to piece together.
All and right. The piecing it together, it paints together a very clear story.
All right.
It's just one that we were not familiar with before.
And we're going to talk about that. We'll get to exactly what that story is coming up next. Dr. Judy Wood, just like it sounds, .com. Discount gold and silver trading .net. And you remember to tell them that Raleigh sent you. There's an old sleight of hand, a trick that anybody who's been to a carnival can see, or anybody who's watched a magic show. While you're focused on one hand, the other hand is doing the trick. Well, that's pretty much what we have here. And it's interesting to note, Judy, you know, I told you before I was somewhat incredulous that the government hadn't done more of a study. But if they keep a lot of these issues alive, it allows people to go down paths that have nothing to do with what's going on here.
Right, and it just quiets the whole thing. It takes care of the problem for them.
So right there, those who think that the 9/11 truthers, so to speak, are operating against the government, it seems that unwittingly they're playing right into their hands in terms of, I don't know who did this, but whoever did this doesn't want anybody to be able to analyze it. And frankly, most people couldn't.
Well, actually they could, but we're not trained to think independently. We're trained to follow the herd.
Sure, but the average person, frankly, doesn't know about a coefficient of gravity, doesn't know that something can't spontaneously combust or anything like this. The things that are...
But they know which way a car is normally oriented. You know, the tires are normally oriented down, not up.
True.
There's a lot of cars around the World Trade Center complex that day that ended up, you know, parked upside down.
What could explain that?
I started looking into, weather events. You hear of tornadoes lifting up cars?
Yeah.
I came to realize that it's not the wind. They're not getting blown around because you get a car that's sitting on top of a fence, doesn't have a scratch on it. And for it to get there, it just had to be levitated and set down there. It's a type of levitation that takes place. And I mentioned about John Hutchison's work, and the same kind of physics involved in his work are the same things that I believe happened to the World Trade Center complex.
He does
levitation.
Okay, I was going to say, what in his studies is he doing? Levitation as part of an overall process, or levitation as a end process? What's his deal?
Oh, that's just one of the, the Hutchison effect is a series of anomalous things like metal turning to jello and later resolidifying, different materials fusing together like a piece of wood embedded in a piece of aluminum. If you pour molten aluminum over the wood, it burns.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you get a pristine piece of wood embedded in aluminum?
Right.
This horseshoe-shaped beams, like a 2 or 3 inch diameter beam, that's curled around like a Cheeto or something. If you tried to put that in a vice grip and bend it, even with heat, you couldn't bend it like that. It's a smooth bend. It's this material that's, coiling up like what happens, like curling a ribbon.
Mm-hmm.
Because you deform one side of the ribbon, it curls.
Right.
It's like some kind of energy hit the metal at one place and caused it to curl. A 2 or 3 inch diameter solid like copper beam, aluminum, steel, different molybdenum. He's got various ones. He was trying to replicate the work of Nikola Tesla.
Right.
And ended up discovering all these anomalous things.
Right, right. That's what I had heard about him, is that he was going after Tesla's work and that this was the product of that. And, you very often hear about him and esoteric things like UFOs or some of the work of John Alexander, who now we're getting into the idea of using this as unconventional weaponry.
Mm-hmm.
And so that, I think, is where we are on this. So with that in mind, assuming that this is possible, I mean, it's obviously possible on some level because we're seeing the result, but is there anywhere else on the globe that you know of that things like this have occurred?
Well, there are weird things we've heard happening in Iraq. I haven't been over there to see for myself.
Right.
But it's not something we would really, that wouldn't make the newspaper. It's something that they wouldn't want folks to be on to anyway.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. But you'd hope that got around. At least, here's John Hutchison, and obviously, and we should mention he's a Canadian, and his lab was seized at one point, wasn't it?
Regularly, and also last spring it was.
Yeah. So there's got to be other people who are sympathetic to his research and the results thereof, who are looking for indications of this. I guess what I'm saying is that it seems amazing that the first major use of this is to topple the Twin Towers, and then that does get into the main conspiracies of who did it and why. In other words, it's almost as if it's not only a demonstration, but there is another aim. Like I've said, that the Patriot Act is not written on January 12th. So,
and also, if it's a technology that no one's aware of,
right,
it's easy to get away with right there in plain sight.
Sure it is. But then that begs the question, why?
I don't know what the scheme of things is. I don't know who planned it or why they planned it, but we can see what scares me the most is that this technology is capable of splitting the Earth in half on a moment's notice.
Now, of course, when you say that, the first thing that comes to my mind is, oh, no, let's talk about the law of unintended consequence in terms of, what do you want to call it, the Hutchison effect or whatever. But if you're saying capable of splitting the earth in half, what's the likelihood that somebody's going to accidentally do that?
It gives the term scorched earth policy a new meaning.
Total new meaning. And that's very frightening to go there. But even for a moment, forgetting about the unintended consequence, it also, to the military, would have irresistible applications.
Oh, if you have this, if you can poof anybody you want, you know, erase them, erase a continent, you get a madman crazy enough, and what's going to happen? And, you know, we as citizens of this planet owe it to ourselves and all future generations to see that this technology gets put into good hands and put to good use.
And,
it's
and
out there. It exists.
And quickly, one of the things that's interesting about it that your research into the World Trade Center has shown is that it can be telegraphed directly to the intended recipient of this. It can be a very narrow focus, so to speak. And that's fascinating. But one of the things that had worried me is that Hutchison is an interesting fella, and of course there's some people who say he faked it all and all that, but regardless, we're not talking about somebody who has knowledge that someone else couldn't also come across. So now you say to yourself, is the theory behind this, what you're calling the unknown theory to scientists, sufficiently simple that, quote-unquote, the bad guys can do this?
Nikola Tesla, I believe, actually had it and dismantled it because of the implications.
Right. Right. But assuming that there are boogeymen who want to get us, and that's a jump, too, are we saying that the average person of interest could ultimately stumble across this, because the implications of that are goodbye Earth?
Yeah. Or if you end up with a war with two gangs that have this.
Well, yeah.
It turned the Earth into powder, like the World Trade Center was turned into powder.
There's a number of things that are in the news, things like pulse bombs that could easily wipe out all of our computerization in one fell swoop, which some would say would have as devastating effect as they need to turn us back to the shifting, whispering sands. But if we know that those things exist, then it's not a great leap to say that these things exist.
Well, we know they do. Once you look at the data and see it.
Right.
Something horrendous happened on 9/11.
And something, again, that is inexplicable by conventional science.
Right. It's a different kind of physics than what we were taught that is used. And this type of physics can also be used to provide us with free energy for the world.
Well, that
we don't need to fight over energy.
Right. That I absolutely believe. And not only is that implicated in your website and the research and all that, but it's an obvious conclusion that quote-unquote free energy can easily be generated. And there's a number of people who the last thing they want is that, who are in a position to lose from that, clearly.
Right. You control the energy. You control the people.
Right, right, right. And that's not lost on the government either. So this being out there is clearly not something that those who seek to control us on whatever level want out there. Yet, it's in plain sight. And it's almost...
Well, that's the best place to hide it.
Well, it's almost arrogant to think that there's not a Dr. Judy Wood, though. Now, so let's for a moment talk about this. When you got very public about this, when it finally got to the point where you said, I'm bringing this to the public, what happened to you in your teaching career?
Well, that was it. And a bunch of interesting things happened. I was naive, thinking that I would be around like-minded people that everyone would understand.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize, join these various, groups interested that claim that they're interested in 9/11 truth. I didn't realize how that it's organized. It's organized to derail you off into the ditch so that you can't be effective. And it's amazing the kind of layers upon layers you go through a learning curve, then pretty soon you can start spotting it pretty easily.
So,
and, you know, how it works, and it's amazing how effective it is. It's like political campaigns, how to do the smear campaign.
Right.
It works. It's ridiculous, and it's unethical, evil, and whatnot, but it works. It doesn't even have to be, you know, true information to get people to turn against someone.
So you were untenured at Clemson, but teaching there, was that the situation?
Yeah.
And so, therefore, they had the right not to renew the contract. Did they tell you why?
No, and I don't like to get into that. It's you know, move on. But you can see the position for everyone. It's a tough position. And there were some other folks who didn't have tenure yet that I was talking to about 9/11, and they just wanted to keep their nose down, weren't going to go there. They thought they would lose their grants and other things, too.
There is a group of college professors who are questioning 9/11. Obviously, they've you know, they've come forth in the past. Are they on any level questioning the physics of it, or are they hung up on the government issue?
What group are you speaking of?
A fellow was from the University. I don't remember if it was Brigham Young or University of Utah, but several folks in Utah who have been very vocal now about this.
And yeah, they're probably the most vocal critics of my work.
Really? Okay. Now,
very, very much.
So
yeah.
let me
from,
ask
from the beginning, from you know, January 2006.
So with that in mind, are they? Because I've never had them on or had a reason to. But is their supposition just that the government's hiding something rather than the physics is off?
Right, and they actually have this site that they call a publication, a journal.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at when it got started, it was, I think it's like 70 or 80% of the articles were written to debunk me. It makes me feel important.
Well, my questioning there is that I don't know if this BYU professor, and I think one of them was from Utah Valley State, which is a soap opera unto itself, frankly, but it's... they're supposedly professors of engineering. How can they debunk, or on what basis are they debunking?
Oh, it's like running a political campaign. One of the biggest things that this fellow came out saying, it would take 10 people 10 trips to put enough, you know, bombs in the building to do it in. And then, you know, here I come out with stuff, and they need to shut me down, and they... you know, do this surprise interview. They pulled me out of the audience from someplace. Do weird lighting, and you know, it was a professional psyops hit job. And they feature this on their thing. And then they did this article that it would take five times the world's total energy output to destroy the towers. So Judy Wood is wrong. Well, are the towers still there?
Well, the other thing, too, is that you can't debunk a new technology using the rules of the old technology.
Well, they don't even debunk it in getting down to, you know, things that are logical. It's, oh, but all the building contents are still there. Oh, the building didn't turn to dust. It's you know, promoting of the official story in a backwards kind of way.
Yeah, yeah. So basically the agenda there is just that that the government did it, rather than to look at what was done.
Right, and then if you blame the government without the right evidence, you know, you don't get to have a case.
At all. But, again, you know, what you're talking about here is actually much more frightening than the concept that the government precipitated it with traditional technology. What you're talking about, as you say, you're talking about splitting the earth. I think most of us aren't even thinking on that level, but we're talking about the kind of controlled destruction that can be catastrophic in a heartbeat to anyone.
Yeah, you know, just to... turn the earth into dust, into an asteroid belt.
Amazing. Hang on a minute. DrJudyWood.com. And I am checking email. If you're right now piping up with questions, I'll take them. We've got another half hour with Judy. I'm looking forward to this. You can check out her website, and that is DrJudyWood.com. And you'll be reading for a long time, and the implications of this are flat-out startling. And we're back to Dr. Judy Wood. You know, I was playing Wind by the Diablos there, and it occurred to me, speaking of wind, among other things, seismic irregularities and such, we had a hurricane that wasn't being reported. What's up with that?
Yeah, that was pretty interesting. How I discovered that, I was looking at the fumes and how the fumes go up, and I had this satellite image of the fumes going, white fumes going up and black fumes kind of wafting out over the Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, you know, what's the segregation based on, you know, the color of the fumes?
Right.
And I wanted to get a different angle and went looking for some weather satellite images, and lo and behold, is this huge hurricane right outside of New York City on the morning of 9/11. Looking into it more, it was headed straight for New York City 4 days. It's just on a linear path, and it stopped right outside of New York City on the morning of 9/11. And turned around and started heading out of town that afternoon. You know, just put it in reverse. You know, there's other weather patterns that would that might cause that, but how could they be, the weather people, weather watchers, be so sure, so confident that that thing wasn't going to stall out there? Because if it did, you'd have storm surges. It would flood JFK Airport. It would flood Lower Manhattan. So in case, you know, there's a chance of this, aren't you going to warn the people and tell them they might want to evacuate? They had to be so confident of exactly where that hurricane was going to go. How could anyone be that confident?
Well,
unless they could control it.
That makes you wonder, is it possible they were trying to control the hurricane and not do what was done?
What do you mean?
Well, what I mean is here we're looking at 9/11 as intentionally caused by someone for some purpose. Is it possible
mm-hmm.
it was the law of unintended consequences, and they weren't planning to do that?
The tower just went poof because the hurricane happened to be there?
Well, no, that they were trying to manipulate something else, whether it be weather or what have you.
It would be difficult to find a coincidence that every building with the WTC prefix went poof.
Oh,
and
I know.
The other buildings did.
Yeah, absolutely. But when you talk...
We didn't have, you know... Three buildings. A lot of folks advertise three buildings. We had seven buildings. The main body of building four is completely gone, down to ground level. You can sweep up the remains. It looks like it got sawed off from the north wing, just like sliced off with the X-Acto knife.
Right.
Building three disappeared. These buildings just poof disappeared, but the building across the street, except for broken windows, is pristine condition.
Oh, clearly. Yeah, no, clearly something happened that was not natural, shall we say. I don't think there's a doubt in the world about that.
Right.
But, the you know, just like we talked about somebody inadvertently cutting the earth in half who might not be planning to.
Right.
Is it possible they were planning to do something else that they were doing even from that location, and what happened was not what they were planning to have happen?
It seemed that it was too carefully planned.
Okay.
There's so many different aspects of it, but that hurricane was studied beginning 2 weeks before it was born.
And well,
it was studied back in August.
The thing about that hurricane that was interesting to me is that that was the longest lived hurricane in all of 2001.
Yeah, it was the strongest one to date at that point.
Well, the fact that it had been a hurricane for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
You know, that was interesting as well. Now, I must admit I'm not glued to the Weather Channel, so are you saying, because this is a hurricane that, ultimately was in Newfoundland, and I guess it lost its identity in Greenland after the fact, but are you saying beforehand that this was just not a Weather Channel report?
It was a Category 3 hurricane the day before, and it had gone past Bermuda, and it started cranking up speed just as it passed Bermuda.
Okay.
And it's just a straight line to New York City. It's right outside New York City. You know, the outer bands are on Long Island. We had thunder reported at JFK Airport, at Newark Airport, and LaGuardia Airport.
Right.
All, you know, points around. You know, you get field effects from weather systems. You know, people feel a storm coming who have arthritis.
Yeah.
I bet you the people sensed it. That's how you get these dry thunder and other
right.
things. You had the outer bands were on the edge of Long Island. It was raining at Cape Cod. There's this huge pinwheel out there.
What's
and the morning, you know, Good Morning America, whatever, on those morning national news shows, here's the nation's weather. Here's the map of the United States. And the map extends out to a good way out into the Atlantic. It mm-hmm. covers the area where that hurricane would be. But there's no hurricane in their weather map. You know, it's just a little icon they would place there.
What's really interesting to me about this is that obviously there's talk of Hurricane Erin online. There's even a Wikipedia article. And when you start to read it, it's fascinating because it'll talk about the threat to Bermuda and the hurricane watch and the flights at a Bermuda airport. And then it'll talk about the swells from North Carolina. And after that, it jumps to Erin produced moderate winds across Newfoundland. It, even in hindsight, doesn't mention anything about New York or the coast or Long Island or Cape Cod or any of that. That is
fascinating. There was a bunch of military ships that were stationed off the Jersey coast,
yeah.
right there. They took them out to sea. And I believe it was so they didn't get damaged. You don't want to keep boats tied up at the dock when the storm's coming in.
What do you think, if any, do you think that hurricane was coincidental, or what is the relationship you see there?
Looking at more aspects of the weather, we had for 24 hours with, you know, the morning of 9/11 kind of centered in that 24 hours, constant wind speed of the hurricane, pretty much constant location, and constant pressure. In other words, a constant environment. And it was this massive thing. It was a Category 3 when it was a tight thing, but then it extended out, you know, like a figure skater putting their arms out, it slows down. But the field effects are, you know, a large, large area. And as we all recall, that was the clearest day in the East Coast we'd seen for a long, long time. It was clear just in this narrow pathway between New York and Washington, D.C., and right, you know, off the edge of that was this hurricane,
yeah.
and there was a cold front on the other side. So there was the weather was it just like held constant. And I think of it like a petri dish.
Right.
It's an environment ready to do another project. Maybe it may have been part of the thing. A hurricane, if you think about it, looks like a big Tesla coil.
Right.
You have something spinning around a stem, and then you have like a toroidal thing around the top, and you get arcing between the top and the ground, like if there's a potential. So it could also do that, like, you know, big Tesla coil. I'm not the designer of it. Any
right.
number of things could be, but it's clear that the weather condition was held very constant for that 24 hours.
Right, and we have
controlled environment.
Joseph had emailed, we have a history of being able to control the weather pretty well in certain aspects, seeding storms and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
So that's actually not out of the question. But what's fascinating about this is, you know, the little physics I had, the one thing that they always hated was what they called pop physics, you know, where I'd be saying things like, well, nothing is different. Everything is a vibration, whether it's manifesting as a solid or not and all that. And yet many of the things we're talking about when we talk about non-conventional weapons or even sub-quantum kinetics and things like this is almost a fusion of physics and pop physics. It's almost back to we're able to control things and change things and do things. What we're really talking about is changing vibratory essence.
We were taught one physics in high school. We weren't taught the whole story. There's this other physics that's been kept kind of secret from us. That's what I think.
Well, and that's what's so fascinating, because you can go back to 100 years and they were talking about it in all of the various self-help books, like the thought vibration or to some degree the thing that's behind that smarmy secret that's out there now, or the law of attraction or all that stuff. It
mm-hmm.
seems as if that field, again, the thing that was always disgustedly referred to as pop physics when I'd mentioned people like Harold Sherman, you know, they'd look at that like, oh, that isn't real. But from what we've been saying all night is it may be exactly the fusion of that with traditional
mm-hmm.
physics.
I'm with you here. Yeah, I totally agree. Like the idea of a woman holding her car up off with a child's about to be run over.
Yeah, all of so many things.
Did you know that when when a woman holds the car up off the kid, you know, this like super strength situation, the air temperature around that area drops slightly.
Right. And they try to tell us that, oh, that's just a burst of adrenaline. That's my favorite. So, yeah. And I guess Paul LaViolette had studied this or is studying this to some degree, his subquantum kinetics and others. Again, Tesla, of course, the most notable. But it is as if there is a number of individuals, either separately, probably separately, who are dancing around just this. But this is the first time we've seen this type of a display. Now, have you talked to people like Paul LaViolette?
I've just started corresponding with some people. I don't want to get into it more than that because... When the critical mass starts picking up, it causes the powers that be a problem.
No, I got that. But, bottom line is people who are Tesla devotees, say, would have no trouble whatsoever. And I realize they range, by the way, from the out-and-out kooks to people who are hard scientists and everything in between. But I would think that there's more sympathy for what you are saying than...
These are people who knew that things didn't look right in 9/11, but they didn't know why.
Right.
Really, they kind of suspected things, and then they went on about their life. But have come back and seen my display of the evidence, and it's just undeniable.
Yeah.
And you know, like, duh, why didn't I see that before kind of thing. There's a lot of folks like that I've talked with.
I would think that this will continue to gain traction. You know, the John Alexanders of the world who do talk about the non-conventional weaponry, this fits right into what he's saying is absolutely possible at this point. And that's why.
Oh, very much. And so much more is possible.
Yeah.
And imagine if we had that in the public domain, that type of information. It would just change our entire culture tremendously. That would be a big shock, but I think it would transition slowly.
Well, it also, again, there's people apart from the weaponry aspect, the major oil companies, they don't want to be rendered impotent. The government itself, let's face it, there is no centralized government that isn't all about control. That's what this is. You give people perpetually free energy, and you've lost a good modicum of control.
There's nothing to fight about.
Right.
So all of the military-industrial complex is out of a job.
Right. Right. So for those nameless faceless that we like to call the Illuminati, for instance, there's very big stakes in this. And then that comes back again to, yes, it's hiding in plain sight. That's true. But why at all? Is it a test to see whether or not people will even pick up on it or believe it? Or, you know, you start, and this is way out of the range of science now. It's total conjecture. But why? Why? What the hell? You know, to try and formulate for those of deceptive minds why this was a good idea, you've got to have some thought about that just personally. What do you think this is really about?
He who controls the energy controls the people.
So do you think it was a display to show somebody or somebody's else what was possible?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know who did it. I don't know if it's inside our government, outside our government, on our planet, off our planet. I'm not, needing to go see who did it until I figure out what happened first.
Right, right.
And what happened was just so amazing. Aren't there scientists who want to study it so they can replicate it for good?
There have got to be. And I'm sure that they're not showing your bravery of coming forth, but there have got to be. Now, in the years that you've been studying it, are you closer to an idea of exactly what this is?
Yes. But still, it's not like I can design it. I know all the characteristics of it. I don't know the serial numbers.
Right. Oh, of course not. But
there's no question. That's why after I finished studying it, some amount of time, some number of years, when I saw the work of John Hutchison, I recognized so many things. Every single thing had a one-to-one correlation.
Absolutely fascinating. Thank you so much for taking an evening. Now, we didn't take calls, and I know a lot of people chastise me for that. So can we have you back again to open you up to the public at large?
Sure, I would love that.
I would, too. Thank you for your research, and thank you for your bravery. Very few people, obviously very few of your colleagues, will step up to the plate, and the bottom line is we, the public, need to know what's going on.
Well, I thank you for your bravery.
It's easy.
You know, very awesome.
Well, we'll do it again soon. Thanks, Judy.
Thanks.
All right, so drjudywood.com, drjudywood.com. All right, I wanted to lay a foundation for 3 hours there so that everybody would get an idea that when we're talking 9/11 conspiracy, it's not a whodunit. Yeah. In fact, when you really think about the implications of what Dr. Wood is talking about, whodunit becomes alarmingly secondary. Though, again, it cannot be downplayed that the Patriot Act was not written on September 12th. So there's government complicity, if nothing else. But that becomes, as I say, the secondary, if not tertiary, question. So we'll leave it there, and we will talk to Judy again, and gives you something to think about. And fascinating. I've had several people who have written, great show, finally someone's talking about this. I've had other people who are thinking that I'm on drugs. All right, and everything in between. So that said, I think I'll just go get dinner, no drugs involved, and kind of ruminate on it myself. But the beauty of this is if you want to ruminate, you'll be in good company when you go to drjudywood.com, because there is enough information for, I don't know, maybe it shouldn't be dinner. Maybe that's going to be stomach-turning, but enough information to give you plenty of things to think about. Maybe not a conclusion other than to say that, oh, yeah, the official word absolutely is not right, but not for any of the reasons you were thinking it was. So my thanks to Judy. Also to Sheldon Day, who had suggested that we have Judy on. That was very kind of him. And on that, that's a wrap. The beat goes on.
It's the Raleigh James Show.